thousands of years, humans have been looking to the stars, searching for answers. Here in Nizhny Arkhi, scientists continue that tradition, getting information from galaxies far, far away in hopes that humanity might survive in the future. Gennady Vilyavin is head of a special astrophysical observatory, home to many unique telescopes, which means we're in for an interesting tour. Genya, hello.
Hello.
So this is the BTA. So tell me, what is it? How do we get an image from here? It's not like looking into a telescope at home and seeing the moon. What kind of an image can we get here?
Big telescope. This is the large Altazimuth telescope. Despite its size, the way we capture images of celestial objects, stars, galaxies, quasars, and so on, with this telescope is fundamentally the same as with amateur telescopes. The unique feature of this instrument is its Altazimuth mount. This telescope was pioneered in this regard. Up there was the first platform where our initial observations took place. Colloquially, we call it the glass, because it looks like a glass. Observers used to sit there at one time. Nowadays, of course, everything happens automatically. An observer is no longer needed, but the observer who used to sit there would adjust the coordinates, track stars, and so on.
If I understand correctly, you were the last person who was able to work up there, yeah?
Right. I'm the last person who worked there.
So
this is my it was 20 years ago.
So this is like a time machine in many ways, because the light that we're getting here now is from billions of years ago. What is the furthest back that you've ever been able to capture an image here at this telescope?
As of today, we can say, yes, it's indeed a time machine. It allows us to look not only far, but also back in time. This telescope was prepared specifically for this purpose. This is what makes it unique. This is what makes all large telescopes unique. This telescope can look very, very far and into very, very long ago. What we mean by that is events that happened in the universe more than 10 billion years ago. It can also look at the distance light has traveled, more than 10 billion years. I can't say exactly right now what the maximum redshifts we have obtained for galaxies or quasars are, but it's somewhere around 5, so that is, I don't know, approximately 11 to 12 billion years ago. And that means 12 billion light years from here accordingly. So there you go.
I see we have some movement here. Can you tell me what's happening? Like, what are we actually seeing here with this telescope?
The telescope points at a star and rotates on its axis. The operator gives the command to aim at a specific point in the celestial sphere, and it starts. Now it's supposedly aimed at the star.
So, not just asteroids, there are other things that can be dangerous to us here on Earth as well, such as, let's say, a pulsar or a quasar close to us. Do you worry about any of that? Does any of that keep you up at night?
Don't worry. Pulsars and quasars are very far away from us. Quasars, in fact, don't really exist in the present time. Well, maybe some of the closest ones do. The quasars we see are among the most distant objects that existed tens of billions of years ago. They show us the active process of galactic disk formation. These are young, active galaxy nuclei that emit enormous amounts of energy. But don't worry about them. There's nothing to fear. Neither pulsars nor quasars pose any threat. In general, all events related to the collision of large objects, such as Earth or the solar system, while not entirely impossible, are extremely rare, and at least for our solar system, nothing will threaten us for hundreds of millions of billions of years.
So I have to ask, you've been studying space your entire life. Would you like to personally go up into space and be closer to the action? And do you think that there might be a benefit for astronomers like yourself to be up there and closer and see things for themselves?
Personally, I do dream of space, but I see many interesting things to do here as well. Moreover, some things in space are fundamentally impossible to achieve. However, I believe that in the future, when space travel becomes less costly, all astronomy will move to space, perhaps to the moon. Observing space from the moon would be very effective.
There are some people who think that astronomy doesn't help us in our everyday lives, that it's just something that's going to happen in the future. What can you tell people about astronomy that we benefit from?
Good question. I get asked this question very often by visitors to the observatory. Why should we pay such large sums from our taxes to satisfy curiosity? In reality, this question runs much deeper. That perspective is very superficial. Besides the fact that astronomy enriches our cultural life, it also provides significant technological contributions to domestic and global advancements in fields and technologies unrelated to astronomy. In this sense, astronomy, even if it doesn't directly feed us, plays a role in this process. All fundamental science is built on this principle. It's very wrong to think that what we do here is detached from life and unnecessary. We need to consider everything as a whole, and all technological complexes in the most highly developed countries of the world are interconnected and related to each other. So there is a direct practical benefit from astronomy.
So looking beyond our solar system, we have exoplanets. They exist. Tell me about those, and are you certain that we're going to find life there?
I think so, but that is something that awaits us in the future. Life is a stage in the evolution of the overall chemistry of the universe, its chemical elements. From the moment of birth to the aging of our universe, it becomes more and more complex. Initially, it was just hydrogen, then other elements were synthesized, and so on. Then came rock materials, organic substances, and finally, life. We know that this process occurs uniformly throughout the universe. If life exists somewhere, then it exists everywhere. It's just a matter of finding it. Personally, I believe that biological life will be discovered on other planets. Not civilizations, but biological life. Some forms of life or signs of its existence will be discovered within our lifetimes. Finding a civilization is much more complicated. The question of civilization remains open. The complexity lies not in finding a civilization, but in understanding what a civilization is. If we're talking about a civilization like ours, it's hard to imagine what that might be. At least, I find it hard to believe it would be very similar. It could be some other branch of life, but we can only speculate.
So the sun, as it expands, the Earth will not survive this as it gets brighter. How long do we have before this happens, and what can we expect to see in this process?
Don't worry. We still have some 5 billion years to go without any problems.
And I'm going to ask this because of the DART project, but is, in essence, astronomy the only science that's really going to help us survive in the future, because we need to be ready for asteroids coming our way, know when they're coming, or know how we can manipulate them?
You're absolutely right. Astronomy, in this sense, has great meaning for our lives right now, at this time. This has to do with asteroid astronomy as well. I mean, people underestimate it. Just recently, a couple of years ago, a massive asteroid blew up near Chelyabinsk. Had it been 10 times bigger, it would have been a tragedy. It was actually quite intense. No one was killed, but windows were shattered, people wounded, and so on. And we hadn't noticed it. That's our drama as astronomers. Estimates vary. But these days, we only control just a few percent of outer space. The rest of it is on its own. If an asteroid is far away, we have plenty of time to see it. Smaller ones, they fly in the dark, and they are dangerous. They emerge out of nowhere, and they are easy to overlook.
Is there a bit of a paradox? I mean, if we can change the course of an asteroid, can we be creating more problems in the future?
I don't know if there are going to be more problems, but personally, I think what we saw recently, the changing of an asteroid's trajectory, that's great progress, really. It gives us certain hope that in the future, at some point at least, this problem will be solved and will be protected.
This is the Rattan 600. It is the size of 40 football fields and has about 1,000 mirrored elements. It was designed to capture signals from space, listening in to the conversation of the cosmos. Yulia, thank you for taking us to your office, as it were. Appreciate the opportunity to show us this radio telescope. What kind of signals do you catch here, and what kind of information can you get from them? And also, have you ever gotten any signals that you weren't able to explain?
Just like a common land-based telescope, Rattan 600 captures non-thermal synchrotron emission, mostly from celestial bodies. For example, the Sun, the closest star to us, emits radio waves, and we can observe it. Most other objects are extragalactic sources or radio waves like galaxies and quasars. And the signals from them that the radio telescope captures are the non-thermal synchrotron radio emission of electrons. It's called synchrotron emission because electrons move along magnetic field lines at close to the speed of light. That's the main type of data that a radio telescope captures. What we observe here are hundreds of thousands of space objects that emit radio waves. We receive data on their activity, on their calm state, and on the evolution of the synchrotron emission that originates from the central areas of galaxies and quasars. Mostly it's galaxies and quasars that we observe here.
Now, I understand that the Sun is getting ready for a period of extra activity. And what kind of information can your radio telescope tell us about what's to come, and what can we learn from this extra active period in the Sun?
In our daily observations with Rattan 600, we study solar activity in the radio frequency band. The key advantage of Rattan 600 is that it can work in multiple frequencies. We study space objects from 1 to 30 gigahertz, and we receive this data instantly. As the nearest star heated to 6,000 degrees Kelvin, the Sun is the focus of our studies. As we know, the Sun is now in its 11-year cycle of activity, now in its growth phase. After many years at the minimum, now it's at maximum. The key data that Rattan 600 retrieves, and where we have massively improved, is solar activity forecasting. For example, the radio frequency allows us to predict proton flares on the Sun several days in advance. A proton flare is a powerful outburst of solar particles with a large share of protons. Radio frequency data retrieved by Raiden 600 allows us to predict such flares 2 or 3 days in advance. The data is fed to our observatory's website, where automatic forecasts are released, positive or negative. Of course, this forecast is not 100% accurate, but in 80% of events, our flare forecasts are confirmed.
So these solar flares, these bursts of plasma coming from the sun, they're strong enough to cause disruptions in communication down here on Earth. What can we learn from this? What can we do to prepare? And I mean, is humanity in for some sort of chaos because of these solar storms?
Solar activity has a significant impact on humans, the atmosphere, and all communications. How can we protect ourselves against this? Here, at Raiden 600, we only gather information that helps us understand what's coming. As for the measures that protect us from solar flares, well, sometimes we're told to stay at home.
Okay. So the Raiden 600 can capture signals from faraway blazars and quasars, and it's incredibly interesting and important. What kind of information can we get from that, and how can it help us in the future?
Blazars and quasars are different classes of active galactic nuclei. They are radio sources. The electromagnetic radiation they emit mostly falls into the radio range. So why do we study them? It's not just for the sake of fundamental science, it's for the benefit of humanity. We all live on Earth, and it would be foolish not to be curious about what's out there. It's the first question we ask as humans. We are surrounded by colossal energy and enormous energy sources. By studying them, we can explore alternative ways to produce energy, which is a pressing issue, given that our planet's resources are limited.
So, this is incredibly interesting. Can you show us a little bit more of your office, or should I say, this telescope? So, that we know of, we have not heard any signals from alien civilizations. Is it because we just don't have the capabilities to do so yet, or is there nothing out there to look for?
To be honest, I can't give you a definitive answer to this question. Our telescope doesn't search for signals from extraterrestrial civilizations. We focus solely on fundamental research. However, there are major applied research programs around the world that are well-funded and dedicated to this task. The efforts being made in this direction suggest that our technical capabilities are still far from achieving this goal.
So, I know about the Kardashev scale, about needing much more energy in order to possibly make contact. Is that a technical problem, or is that still a theory?
It could be either. The electromagnetic spectrum that we know spans from radio waves to gamma rays. We can receive and process signals within this range, which is why we focus on it. Modern instruments, such as ground-based and space observatories, aim to increase sensitivity to detect very weak signals. It's possible that we're searching for something that doesn't exist. It's also possible that the signal we're looking for is extremely faint, but that is not very likely. It might be that there's no one out there for us to find.
So, you personally, do you hope to find alien life out there someday?
Like everyone else on Earth, the thought of us being alone in the universe is frightening to me. On the other hand, it's also scary to think that someone might be close by and could pay us a visit. Of course, the theory of probability suggests that in a universe with unknown boundaries, we can't be the only form of life. There are most likely other life forms out there, which could be less or more advanced than us. It would be fascinating to meet and understand them, but like most people, I'm also apprehensive about it.
So, space exploration kind of goes hand in hand with what you do and what you're studying. What is the next era of space exploration in your mind? What do you think is the next big step for us? Are we on the edge of a new era in the space race?
I believe that the next big step in space development will require a significant technological leap. Ground-based telescopes are improving their sensitivity and angular resolution, but we can't do this endlessly. That's why space telescopes are crucial. There are currently many space telescope missions, including some in our country. They allow us to be unconstrained by the atmosphere and increase sensitivity or angular resolution when a space telescope observes simultaneously with a ground-based telescope. The next step is definitely space observatories, which I think humans have not yet fully mastered.
Now, what is the one thing that you just have trouble wrapping your mind around? Because you're dealing with huge numbers, you're dealing with things that basically people don't understand. Is there something in your mind that just really is hard to understand or grasp?
In our universe.
The most important reason why we study the universe, why we study outer space, is to investigate its birth and evolution. This is the main question. We study all kinds of objects, and their development can point us to the history of the universe and its growth. How and where did everything originate? What was the starting point? There's a theory that everything started with the Big Bang. But what was before that? And was there a Big Bang at all? There are many questions. Theory and observation do not align. In order to explain with theory what we see and observe, we need to make a lot of assumptions, adjustments, and introduce various coefficients, which we often do without explanation. Our primary goal is to understand how everything happened and how everything evolves. This is the main thing astronomy seeks to answer.
If I may ask, what really excites you about your job? Why do you do what you do?
The most impressive thing about an astronomer's work is that we get to do what we love professionally. When we come here, we are first and foremost free in our choices. We can improvise, and very often, we don't have to be told what to do. We are in a state of discovery, and that's exciting. As one of our colleagues said, you come here, enjoy yourself, and get paid for it. It really is a pleasure, especially when you succeed, when you discover something new, or confirm your hypothesis.
People forget how small and fragile our world is here on Earth. As Carl Sagan said, we just live on this pale blue dot. Working with such big numbers and literally astronomical figures, does it put things into perspective for you?
Obviously, if you explore what is around you and also far away, you broaden your horizons. And to engage in any science, you also need to be a philosopher. You need comprehensive approaches, sometimes non-trivial ones. In this regard, astronomy is no exception, but it's also global because we study very distant objects that we cannot see directly. We need to figure out how to observe them, how to improve the image and enhance the signal. And this broadens our horizons, first of all, but also, naturally, our worldview. It's a comprehensive approach.